ride. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world, and happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is June 2nd, 2026, and our top story today is Google, or Alphabet, if you will, and their $80 billion equity raise. That's right, Google is diluting shareholders. Why, you might ask? Well, it's funny you should ask. Because we need money to build data centers. That's right. They're issuing this mix of at the money and convertible preferred stock to throw more money into the furnace of the AI gods, the sacrifice at the altar of the artificial intelligence hype and bubble. And look, you might be asking yourself, why doesn't Google just use all the money they're making? Why are they raising equity? Why are they raising cash? Why are they diluting their shareholders here? Google just reported a massive earnings beat, $62 billion, I think, in profit for their last quarter that Google reported. Why do they need to raise $80 billion? Oh, wait, I'm sorry, this just in. What's that? Oh, they don't actually make money? What's that? More than half of Google's earnings was just paper gains on illiquid securities tied to money-losing AI frontier labs? Oh, so they don't actually have cash to keep burning this. And what's this? Oh, they're also doing this off-balance sheet debt thing, this Enron-esque money-losing thing? Wow. That actually sounds very disturbing. If only somebody had been warning about this kind of shit for, I don't know, the last 3.5 years. By the way, this is what? About a month after Google announced a $70 billion buyback? So somebody help me out here with the logic, all right? And granted, my background is mechanical and nuclear engineering, all right? So I'm not really a finance guy. But to me, to the untrained, unsophisticated brain, buying back $70 billion of your stock only to issue $80 billion of your stock doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Are they buying this stock back from themselves and then issuing it right away? Or are we round-tripping shares now? Well, that's a bold move, Cotton. We'll see if it pays off for him. So, yeah, this silly thing, this silly exercise exposes the fact that AI doesn't make money. AI just loses money. And, you know, I've mentioned this a couple of times now. You can round-trip revenue. You can invest in your customers. You can backstop your own customers spending on your products. You can do all this cockamamie, in my opinion, outright fraudulent bullshit to make your earnings look bigger, but you can't fake money in the bank. And big tech is running out of it. Free cash flow is plummeting at these companies. And now they're diluting shareholders by $80 billion. And keep in mind, if this catches on, it's just Google right now. But what if all of the big hyperscalers start doing this? What if we get these tens of billions in equity raises happening at the same time you've got, oh, I don't know, hypothetically, the largest IPO in history going on over at SpaceX, followed by the other largest IPO in history going on at OpenAI, and the other largest IPO in history going on at Anthropic? Where's all this money coming from? Oh, that's right, you and me. And speaking of these large IPOs, Anthropic has officially filed for their IPO, or I'm sorry, they have confidentially filed for their IPO. They do this sometimes. They file confidentially seeking feedback from regulators before they actually publicly file the S-1. So look, Anthropic has submitted the paperwork to the SEC. They are filing for their IPO now. This is 1 week after raising $65 billion at a $950 billion valuation, which was 1 week after Apollo started shopping around $36 billion of off-balance sheet debt for Anthropic. So just how much money does Anthropic burn through if they need to file for their IPO a week after their Series H funding round was just completed? But this exposes the fact that Anthropic knows they're on the clock. They need to get it done. Get this IPO out the door. Dump those bags on retail, baby, because token maxing is on the way out. We've seen these headlines recently about companies in the sticker shock. Now that Anthropic is changing over to token-based billing instead of flat monthly fees, all these companies are like, wow, we're now spending more on AI than we were on people, and the AI was supposed to replace the people for less money. Yeah, that's not really working out so well. In other words, AI isn't actually the productivity increase that the tech bros have been promising us for years. Again, if only somebody had warned us about this for the last 3.5 years. But I digress. They got to get that AI, that IPO done. And you can see that laid bare in this story about Walmart. Walmart caps use of AI tool. All right, why is Walmart capping the use of the AI tool? I had somebody comment on a post on Twitter yesterday. Somebody help me out here. Why would a company tell its employees not to use a tool that's supposed to make them more productive and make them more money and save them money? Unless maybe it doesn't actually make them more productive and it's actually a waste of money. Then it makes perfect sense. Meanwhile, we've got more AI nuttiness going on. Marvell jumps 22% this morning. Why? Because Jensen Huang said a thing on a stage. No, really, that's it. That's the story. Jensen Huang came out and said, Marvell's a cool company. They're the next trillion-dollar company. And a bunch of tech bros and AI pumpers just went and bought the stock because of that. Jensen Huang said Marvell is the next trillion-dollar company. Marvell has $191 billion market cap right now after running 160% this year to date. So Jensen Huang basically came out and said the stock was going to more than 5X from here, and people believed it, and they bought it. Well, I mean, you have to, right? I mean, the guy wears a black leather jacket, so it's obviously true. Meanwhile, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, HPE, they're ripping 28% this morning after raising their forecast on AI data center demand. Okay, that's good. We're just going to recycle those .com names. Sure, why not? Pump them up. Maybe sprinkle a little Sun Microsystems on there for a little extra flavor. I don't know. Let's see what we're feeling later. I actually do have one story that's given me a little bit of hope this morning. Victoria's Secret is up 40% on an earnings beat. And I had to do a double take on this. Besides the obvious reason to do a double take anytime you see a Victoria's Secret headline, the comps were up 13% at Victoria's Secret stores. Keep in mind, this is up against a backdrop of the weakest consumer sentiment in 80 years. And Victoria's Secret comps are up 13%. They did fewer promotions, so they didn't even have to put stuff on sale, and they gained market share among 18 to 24-year-olds. Wow. You kids are doing great. I know you kids are not doing great, but hey, you know, I've been railing on this declining birth rate thing for a long time here. I've been telling everybody, hey, alcohol sales are down and birth rate is down. These two are related. Well, I don't know. Comps up 13% at Victoria's Secret, chiefly among 18 to 24-year-olds. Maybe we're going to fix that declining birth rate thing. I don't know. You kids have fun. We've also got China is allowing refiners to cut output at their money-losing teapot refineries. This is a story about state and central planning run amok in China and the energy business. And last but not least, short seller Andrew Left is going to jail. He was convicted on several accounts of securities fraud yesterday. I have mixed feelings on this story. I could go either way. And my one question is, if we're going to prosecute Andrew Left, what the hell is Bill Ackman doing walking free? And everybody who's ever gone on CNBC and told people to buy when they were selling, for that matter, why Andrew Left? Stick around to the end of the show for that one. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads. Because we do this every business day. And right now the S&P 500 is lower by 15 points, 0.2% in the red. We've got the Dow is down 258 points, about a half a percent in the red this morning. And the NASDAQ is off by 34 points, 0.11% down. The DXY is down by about 10 basis points here at 99.10 for the Dixie. Looking over at the bond market, we've got the 30-year yield is off by 3.5 points at 4.955. The 10-year yield is lower by 3 points and change at 4.441. The 2-year yield, 4.033. That's off by almost 2 points. And the 1 month is at 3.696, down a fraction of a point. Looking over at Bitcoin, another bloodbath in Bitcoin is underway this morning. $68,980 for Bitcoin, down below 70 grand, off by 2 grand and change after falling by almost 3 grand yesterday. A couple days in a row, I've been warning for a while now, guys, Bitcoin winter is not over. We've got several months left. So keep an eye on this one. This is coming on the heels of Michael Saylor's strategy selling a admittedly very modest 32 Bitcoin yesterday. But the fact that they were actually selling, that was a story, even if it's only one. You know, Michael Saylor's the guy who was be like, oh, don't buy, don't ever sell your Bitcoin. Mortgage your house, sell your kidneys, and buy more Bitcoin. So when his company ends up selling, even if it's a small amount, that's big news. And they may have triggered something here. And most of this buying that we've been watching over the last couple of months has been Saylor and his strategy preferred equity issuance buying from the high 60s into the low 80s. And now that they're selling, well, look out below. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are a little bit higher here this morning. Spot gold, $4,513. That's up by almost 29 bucks, or 0.2% higher. Spot silver is at $75.95, higher by $1.07 or 1.4% in the green. I like the shiny. Copper's up by 1.75%. Platinum is up by 1% and change. Palladium is up by 0.5%. All the metals are up, and oil is a little bit lower this morning. $91.94 for WTI crude, down by about 22 cents or 0.25%. Look, there's been a little bit of story. There's no particular brand of jawboning going on this morning about, yeah, we're very close to a deal or not. We don't need to talk about this, right? There's been no major developments other than the Iranians walked away from the table yesterday. We talked about that, and then President Trump tweets, oh, negotiations are moving along very quickly. Apparently, we're negotiating with ourselves and doing very well. Whatever. The missiles are still flying. The oil is not flowing. Oil's at 92 bucks a barrel this morning. What is interesting is this story here we got about RBI, the Reserve Bank of India, dumping their gold holdings. RBI may have sold gold to save FX reserves, Bloomberg Economics analysis shows. This is interesting because this is not the first story about central banks selling gold to deal with this higher oil crisis. India's central bank may have offloaded a portion of its gold holdings to shield its foreign currency assets from the cascading fallout of the war in the Middle East, according to an analysis by Bloomberg Economics based on publicly available data. The Reserve Bank of India likely sold gold reserves worth roughly $12 billion for the 2 weeks through May 22nd, while buying $7.5 billion of foreign currency assets. That's according to Abhishek Gupta, BE's senior India economist. A fall in the reported value of the RBI's bullion reserves came despite a hike in import duties on the precious metal, which should have boosted the value of the bank's bullion in dollars. This suggests RBI was selling gold. The purported sales underscore policymakers' concerns about the pressure India is facing from sustained capital outflows and higher oil prices as the Iran war and effective closure of the Strait of Hormuz drag on. They also show the RBI is prioritizing reserves of liquid foreign currency as a wider current account deficit weighs on the rupee. And guys, this is why we've been getting this strange behavior in metals, why I've been scratching my head and saying, you know, gold at times behaves like a risk asset since the start of this war. Because when the oil price spikes, yes, you get risk off moves in stocks. People tend to sell stocks on days when oil is ripping. But you're also seeing people sell gold. Well, one of the reasons might be because central banks are selling their gold holdings to buy dollars in order to then dump those dollars on the foreign market to defend their own currencies, or because they need more dollars in order to buy oil because oil is traded in dollars and they don't want to have to print more rupees to get those dollars. So they're selling their gold. And we saw something similar from Turkey. Turkey sold down their gold reserves. It was one of the stands. I don't remember if it was Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan. One of them, there was a story recently about them selling down their gold reserves. And I think more countries that are particularly dependent on energy imports will be forced into doing this as a means of preserving their currency. So that partially explains the move in gold inversely with oil lately. All right, now we got to talk about the big one, Alphabet to raise $80 billion in equity for AI spending. Google parent Alphabet is raising $80 billion through a package of equity offerings, including an investment deal with Berkshire Hathaway, as the company races to fund its ambitious artificial intelligence spending plans. The undertaking includes a $40 billion so-called at-the-market program to sell shares from time to time, beginning in the third quarter, according to a statement on Monday. The company will also offer $30 billion in underwritten offerings of shares with mandatory convertible preferred stock, as well as the $10 billion deal with Berkshire. And you can almost tell that Warren is slowly losing his grip over at Berkshire Hathaway, because Warren Buffett spent the last 3 years amassing the largest cash pile in history sitting out the AI bubble. And now as soon as he leaves, Berkshire's like, well, let's throw some of that into Google at an all-time high. Why not? A very un-Buffett move from Berkshire Hathaway here. Together, the transactions represent one of the largest equity deals of all time, and they bring an unexpected twist to a blockbuster year for initial public offerings. Keep in mind, all this new equity issuance, this is going to compete with the IPOs that are also underway, right? New demand for cash, more products chasing the same money in the stock market here. So it's rare for a large public company to raise this much equity, but the economics of the AI business have pushed Google and its peers to get creative. The company has embarked on an unprecedented spending spree to build the infrastructure that it needs to develop cutting-edge artificial intelligence models and meet demand from customers who want to buy its chips to fulfill their own AI ambitions. But again, Google just posted those amazing earnings last quarter, $62 billion, their best quarter ever. Why don't they just use the money, all their money they're making? It's because they're not actually making money. More than half of their earnings last quarter was Google just marking up their valuation of Anthropic. By the way, something they're going to do again, because Anthropic's valuation has doubled again since they did that. They didn't actually make any money. They just have this thing they can't sell, their stake in Anthropic, and they're just going to say it's worth twice as much, and therefore we earned the difference. In other words, Google doesn't actually have the money to spend on this AI, even though they're out there saying, you know, all these talking heads on CNBC every day, oh, corporate earnings supports the AI rally. The build-out is supported by robust tech earnings. Robust tech earnings are just paper gains on illiquid assets that they can't cash in. And you can see it in this chart here. This one is from Bloomberg. I think this is a couple of weeks old, this chart, but this is trailing four-quarter free cash flow from the main hyperscalers, Oracle, Meta, Google, Amazon, and Microsoft. You can see Oracle is already deeply negative. Amazon is down to effectively zero. They'll be negative soon. Microsoft is really the only one that's managing to maintain their free cash flow, and that's mainly supported by their software business. Google's is rapidly declining. They're here in gray. Meta is virtually disappearing as well. And again, I think all of these are actually going to be negative pretty soon here, because while all this is going on, these companies are also hiding all the debt that they're taking out, issuing these special purpose vehicles, Meta chief among them, through Blue Owl Capital. And I believe, who was it? Was it Google just had a big off balance sheet? No, it was Anthropic just had a big off balance sheet debt raise that Apollo was shopping around for them last week. Because they're all just burning money. And while they're trading back and forth stakes in the same companies and marking paper gains for themselves along the way, you can see money in the bank is actually sharply in decline. And it's scheduled to hit zero very soon here. They better figure out their stuff. I don't know. They better figure out a way to make money with AI soon. Alphabet stock down 3.8% on this news. And again, if this catches on, let's say Amazon, Meta, Google, Microsoft, let's say all of them start doing this too, to raise cash, to sacrifice at the altar of AI. Well, that's going to compete with this series of IPOs that's coming up for investor capital. And these are some of the biggest deals in history. Anthropic just set the stage for a blockbuster IPO, beating OpenAI to the punch. SpaceX is gearing up for its listing, and OpenAI is expected to soon file confidentially for its own IPO. There is a lot of stock about to get dumped on the open market. Anthropic on Monday said it had confidentially filed paperwork for an initial public offering, and it achieved that step ahead of rival artificial intelligence lab OpenAI. The move gives us the option to go public after the SEC completes its review, Anthropic said in a statement. The company added that the IPO timing will depend on market conditions and other factors. Terms around the number of shares and the pricing have not been set. Confidentially filing IPO paperwork is a practice that has become popular over the last several years. It allows companies to receive feedback from regulators before the public can view their financial information. It can help reduce lawsuits, according to a 2020 study. Anthropic's move comes just a week after it announced a $65 billion fundraise that valued it at $965 billion. Just a few months earlier, Anthropic was valued at $380 billion. Its run rate revenue also surpassed $47 billion in May, up from $14 billion in February, according to the company. And those numbers there, I think, tell the story about why Anthropic is trying to rush this out the door. Why would you want to go public with the biggest IPO in history, right as SpaceX and OpenAI are doing the same thing, because they're running out of time to do this. If they wait any longer, they won't be able to, because this bubble is about to burst. Anthropic, $380 billion just a few months ago. Now they're almost a trillion. All right, so they've more than doubled their valuation. Why did they double their valuation? Because their revenue went up to $47 billion from 14 in February. Why did their revenue spike so much? Their revenue spiked so much because they transferred over to token-based billing, and all of their customers unknowingly ran up hundreds of millions of dollars in bills for token usage. And now they're all curtailing it, which means Anthropic's revenue is going to stop growing very soon here. And you can see that in this next story. Walmart caps usage of an AI tool for employees after high demand. Maybe Walmart was that mystery company that ran up a $500 million token bill in 1 month because they forgot to cap user limits. Walmart is limiting staff's usage on an artificial intelligence tool following high demand, illustrating how corporations are adjusting their calculations for incorporating the technology. The retailer is now offering a set amount of tokens per employee to use CodePuppy, an AI agent that helps with tasks ranging from spreadsheets to presentations, said people familiar with the matter who declined to be named, discussing private information. Yes, because we can't possibly do spreadsheets and presentations without AI, right? I mean, what are we, barbarians? Before staff had an unlimited amount of tokens, the unit of data for AI computing, CodePuppy, which was developed in-house at Walmart, was rolled out so employees, as part of the retailer's push to incorporate AI across its platform to work more efficiently. Staff members also have access to other platforms like Claude and ChatGPT, the people said. As companies incorporate AI into workflows, they're finding this comes with costs, especially if employees use it heavily or for tasks involving large amounts of data. Uber Technologies reportedly spent its annual AI budget in just months, while Microsoft was said to pull back some of its offerings. So now you can add Walmart to the list of companies that are like, yeah, you know what? We spent a whole bunch of money on this AI thing. Not really returning a lot of money for us. So we're going to limit our employees' usage. That's, in my opinion, stories like this is why Anthropic is going to jam that IPO out the door as fast as possible. OpenAI the same. Although I think OpenAI is afraid to open up their books because I think it looks even worse under the hood than many of us have speculated. And in our silly AI story of the day, NVIDIA's Jensen Huang says Marvell could be the next trillion-dollar company, and the stock jumps 22%. I mean, that's it. That's the whole story here. Jensen Huang was up on stage in his stupid jacket, and he said Marvell should be a trillion-dollar company. And people went out and bought Marvell stock because of it. That's it. That's the story, guys. Marvell stock up 22% because Jensen Huang said thing, $267.08 for Marvell. Now, look at this. Look at the market cap. It's $191 billion. So Jensen Huang says Marvell should 5X from here. It's already up 158% year to date. So what's another 500% on top of that? Sure. Why not? What stage are we at when stocks rally like this because people say things on stage? Okay. And, oh, we're also this one, HP. HPE surges after intense demand for AI, buoys sales forecast. Dot-com bubble called, and they want their headline back. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise shares soared in pre-market trading after the company gave an outlook for annual sales that topped estimates, citing massive growth in AI-fueled demand for its servers and networking. Revenue will increase about 31% in the fiscal year ending October and about 10% in the year ending October 2027, the company said Monday in a statement. Both are significantly higher than analyst growth expectations, 19 and 5.3% for 2026 and 2027. Why would they forecast the next 2 years revenue run rate like just out of nowhere? I don't know, maybe to capitalize on a hype cycle because stocks are ripping 20, 30% when people say things these days. HPE decided to give an early forecast for 2027 to show the durability of this momentum, according to the CEO. In other words, to pump their stock. Expectations were high for HPE after competitor Dell posted blowout results last week that boosted the shares of the company across the sector. For the quarter that ended in April, revenue rose 40% to $10.7 billion. Analysts on average estimated $9.74 billion. That's according to data compiled by Bloomberg. The growth was led by sales of servers, which jumped 33% to $5.5 billion. Not surprising, considering Google is issuing stock and taking out SPV debt in order to pay for said HP demand. That stock is higher by 26.5%. And again, it was already up 170% year to date. So another one ripping this morning. And Victoria's Secret is on a tear this morning. Not something I typically cover here, but Victoria's Secret share spike 40% after a big earnings beat and a raised sales outlook. And the amazing thing about this is coming amid this backdrop of the worst consumer sentiment that anyone alive has ever seen. Shoppers may be feeling gloomy about high prices at the pump, but they're still shelling out for new bras and underwear at Victoria's Secret. The lingerie retailer raised its full-year guidance on Tuesday after blowing past earnings estimates in its fiscal first quarter, citing lower tariff costs and more customers willing to spend full price on its products. Shares soared about 40% in pre-market trading. There was very consistent double-digit sales increases across Victoria's Secret, Pink, Beauty Channels, digital stores, and international, all very positive, said CEO Hillary Super in a CNBC interview. Supercharging bras being one of our most important initiatives, double-digit comp sales growth, and I think the loyalty that bras creates and the anchor that it is in the business is just so important. Okay, it was a little out of my wheelhouse here, but I digress. Look at these numbers. Earnings per share, 60 cents versus 30 cents expected. Revenue, $1.56 billion versus $1.52 billion expected. Net income for the three-month period ended May 2nd was $47.7 million, or 56 cents a share, compared with a loss of $1.6 million, or 2 cents a share, a year earlier. Excluding one-time restructuring costs, Victoria's Secret saw earnings of 60 cents. Sales rose to $1.56 billion, up 15% from $1.35 billion a year earlier. Comparable sales, including stores and e-commerce, grew 13%, beating expectations of 11.4%. And there was one in particular, this one. The company grew sales significantly with significantly fewer promotions and gained market share during the quarter, particularly with shoppers 18 to 24. And that's not exactly a demographic that's doing really well on the consumer side. So I don't really know what to make of this one, but I'm happy for you kids, all right? Spice up life a little bit. Let's fix that declining birth rate. Let's everybody drink up and make bad decisions. Sure, why not? Meanwhile, China allows output cuts by some money, losing independent refiners. The sources say, this is a very China headline. Oh, you're losing money. All right, we'll let you slow down your business because apparently you need permission to do that even when you lose money in China, which is why central planning of economy is always a terrible idea. China's powerful state planner has allowed some independent refiners to cut output from June, consultancies and sources said, a sign of Beijing's growing confidence that it can weather an oil shock triggered by the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. Some refiners in the eastern province of Shandong, popularly called teapots, were told recently that they can cut output to no lower than 80% of last year's monthly average, consultancy Horizon Insights said in a note on Monday. The change eases an earlier directive to refiners to hold output at an average of the past 2 years' level as Beijing sought to maintain domestic fuel supplies amid disruption from the Iran war, which closed the crucial Middle East waterway. That policy squeezed refiners between capped domestic fuel prices and the rising cost of crude imports, and some were already cutting output last month as margins crumbled. All right, so this is what it's like to do business in China. All right, your costs go up because of the Strait of Hormuz, so it gets more expensive. The government says you're not allowed to raise your prices, so you start losing money, and then you need the government's permission to stop losing money by slowing down your operations. It must be great to be a refiner in China. Now, earlier in May, some refiners in Shandong had sought permission from Beijing to lower processing rates or suspend operations at certain units. Even with the latest changes, production requirements will still be a burden for the sector, which is losing money for every barrel it refines and would prefer to shut down altogether, said one of the two sources. All of the sources spoke on condition of anonymity because this is China and they don't want to disappear in the middle of the night. The Shandong Independents produced about 16% of China's gasoline and a quarter of its diesel in May. However, both fuels are now in plentiful supply thanks to export curbs and sharp declines in fuel demand from a transport fleet that has rapidly electrified over the past several years. So even as all of this is going on, you've got a market that's oversupplied because they're not allowed to sell the extra, which the refiners are being forced to produce at a loss because the government won't let them slow down production or export the excess material that they're producing. And of course, the war in Iran has made their input costs go up. This is what central planning does to economies. And well, this just can't be a good time to be a refiner in China. What can I say? All right. Last but not least, we've got to talk about this one, which is just as soon as the Wall Street Journal decides it's going to update Andrew Left. Where's my Andrew Left story, Wall Street Journal? What are you doing to me here? All right. Am I going to have to open another? I'm going to have to open another window, I guess. Where is it? Andrew Left. He's left the building anyway. Here we go. Prominent short seller Andrew Left, convicted of fraud. Federal jury in Los Angeles found that Left defrauded investors with insincere opinions designed to move stock prices in his favor. And there is Andrew Left from Citron Research there. Andrew Left earned fame and fortune by researching companies, accusing them of fraud and betting their stock price would fall. On Monday, a federal jury convicted him of securities fraud, siding with prosecutors who accused him of using his media savvy and reputation as a stock savant to manipulate shares in a way that would reward his trades. Left, 55 years old, will face sentencing on August 31st. The lead securities fraud charges carry a maximum 25-year prison term. He said he plans to appeal the verdict. Over a three-week trial in Los Angeles, the Justice Department's lawyers hammered on their claim that Left made bold public calls on stocks, often on social media, and then exited a trade minutes or hours later. While Left expressed faith in his stock theories, prosecutors alleged that he aimed to incite small price moves that would yield a quick profit. I think it's the fact that he would dump these things right after publishing his reports. That's where Left went wrong. All right, he would do his research and then he'd say Citron is buying company X, but then an hour later he would dump company X. And it's the fact that he would do the opposite of what he was advocating within minutes or hours of what he posted. That is how he ended up in jail for fraud. And look, that there's good reason for that, right? That's shady as all get out. If you're going to take advantage of your media power to promote a trade when you're publicly promoting the trade, but behind closed doors doing the opposite, that's fraud. All right. That's deception, in my opinion. That being said, Andrew Left had a pretty good track record on top of that. All right. He wasn't just doing this. I mean, Andrew Left, the founder of Citron Research, won a claim after calling out problems at China Evergrande in 2012 and Valiant Pharmaceuticals in 2015. All right. Those are two companies that both went under because of fraud that Andrew Left. Maybe not because he exposed them, but he was vindicated. Evergrande eventually defaulted on its debt, and the company collapsed 2 years ago. Left drew attention to Valiant's use of an undisclosed mail-order pharmacy that helped boost its sales. The company paid a $45 million regulatory fine without admitting or denying fault. So, you know, look, short sellers serve a vital function in the market, right? Short sellers sniff out fraud and expose fraud. And the reason they do it is because there's money in it, at least sometimes. And that's what Andrew Left did. Now, Andrew Left went wrong because he would post his short reports. He'd tell everybody to go short. And then an hour later, he would cover his own short using those people as exit liquidity. That is fraudulent, in my opinion. Now, but if we're going to prosecute Andrew Left, why are we not prosecuting Bill Ackman? Anybody remember in March of 2020 when Bill Ackman went on TV and said hell is coming? And what was it? It was it MGM Resorts? It was one of the big... one of the big casino stocks, maybe it was Hilton, something like that. One of the big casino stocks. He says they're going to zero. He says it on CNBC. And what he didn't tell people was that his firm was buying that particular stock hand over fist while he's on TV saying it's going to zero. Is that not exactly what they just prosecuted Andrew Left for? And by the way, Bill Ackman, he's like, welcome back on CNBC anytime. He used CNBC viewers as exit liquidity for his own positions. And CNBC didn't ban him for life. Prosecutors didn't prosecute him. He didn't even get his office raided. Nothing like that happened. It's the same thing Andrew Left did, just on a much bigger scale. Bill Ackman made billions on that trade compared to a couple of million that Andrew Left made. Maybe we're prosecuting Andrew Left because he's on the short side, though, and because really the market has become just one big endless pump story And we don't want anybody out there who might criticize that endless pump. Certainly not. So look, I've got mixed feelings on this. What left did, you know, selling within minutes of telling people to buy. Yeah, that's bullshit. But at the same time, why are we not prosecuting the much bigger fish in this space? The guys that are on the air doing it on CNBC. But that's my theory on that one. Anyways, guys, I just want to say thank you very much for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button on the way out so we can have our coffee together tomorrow as well. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. I'm Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time. Live small. Dream big.